Thank you, Ricky. Tonight we have, as part of the Sephardic History Lecture Series, we're going to be discussing three of the most well-known Sephardic thinkers, and some of them are poets as well, as many of our Hachamim also managed to, their creativity did not only extend in the Talmudic and Halachic and philosophical world, but also extend to the poetic and creative writing kind of thing as well. Dealing with three of our most famous Jewish thinkers, Sephardi thinkers, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, 10th century in Spain, Rambam, 12th century, and Ramban, 13th century, more or less. And we're dealing with their approach towards the land of Israel, and the reason for that is all three of them eventually come to the land of Israel from Spain, not some directly, some indirectly, and only one ends up remaining there and dies there. But all three of them do have an attitude, an approach toward Eretz Yisrael that could be interesting to look at, and also to try to understand that where we hold philosophically today as far as our approach to Eretz Yisrael. And I think it has a lot of ramifications for the purpose and the function of Eretz Yisrael in our day and age. So without further ado, let's begin the framework in which we'll discuss them. First, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, we might remember some of his poems that we think that they've become part of our liturgy. If anyone remembers our Machzorim, the famous Shalom Yerushalayim Machzor that we use on the high holidays, you see the Yehuda Halevi wrote this one. The opening, for example, the opening piyut that we sing for Yom Kippur, Lecha Eli, right? That one is the Yehuda Halevi's. And numerous other poems. Libi Bemizrach, one of his famous ones. My heart is in the east, but I'm at the edge of the west. How could I taste something? How could it be sweet to my palate? If his heart is in the east, in Eretz Yisrael, but he's in the end of the west. And how could he taste anything if he's not in Eretz Yisrael? How can he enjoy life if not in Eretz Yisrael? Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was a very, very strong believer in Eretz Yisrael as an important part of life for the Jew. And let's look at why. Let's look at what his particular approach to it. And we're going to contrast the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi on the one hand and the Rambam on the other as far as the ability in one particular issue about how to get Nivuah. Eretz Yisrael and Nivuah, according to Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and the Rambam. Nevuah means prophecy. Prophecy is connection to God. It's receiving the divine image, the divine message. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and Rambam both define prophecy not so much in terms of the mission of the prophet, not so much in terms of he would have to go there and tell the people to do this or rebuke them about that, reprimand them, but more in terms of the status of the person that reached the level of prophecy. It was more like the religious experience prophecy. If you borrow a phrase that's common in the English language, but all taken from probably another religious tradition, it's a kind of nirvana, where we're communing with God. Both Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and Rambam define prophecy that way. Interestingly, if we look in the Tanakh, that's not the way the Bible seems to define prophecy, but that didn't bother these thinkers. They're working with a different framework. In fact, for them, prophecy was the paragon of human achievement was to be a prophet. It was that was the example of the perfect person. The perfect person was the one who achieved prophecy. For the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, he lives in the neo-Aristotelian world, philosophically. Aristotle, that's where he's coming from. And in the near, just to give you an overview of the difference, the contrast between Halevi and Rambam, this is the big picture now. Halevi has a particularistic approach, Rambam, the universalistic approach. You can say that almost throughout, the view of Halevi is going to be particularistic. Prophecy, only for Jews. only in Eretz Yisrael. Prophecy can only exist for Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Sounds very unusual. Can't God speak to anyone anywhere? Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says, no. God speaks to Jews in Israel. That's it. Rambam, on the other hand, prophecy, God can speak to anyone anywhere. So, particularistic, universalistic, that's the big picture. Let's look at some of the, before we look at some of the sources, let's see, what are the things required for prophecy? In Aristotelian philosophy, there were three different qualities necessary for prophecy. And those three qualities were that the person had the proper genes, put it that way. He had the proper temperament which he inherited from his family. Number two, the person had the proper environment that he lived in. And number three, that the person had the actions, the directions on how to carry those two things out into actuality. According to Aristotelian theory, and it comes up in different places, if you had those things, then you were fine. According to Halevi, he takes each one of those things and says, well, that makes sense now. The perfect inheritance of the descendants of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Only those who are descendants can have that perfection. The perfect land, Eretz Israel. And, of course, the perfect ways of behaving, the mitzvot. There's nothing going to be more perfect than that. And therefore, prophecy, in other words, human perfection, can only be achieved by Jews in Eretz Israel. Let's take that a little further. Yes, questions. If there are any questions or anything, feel free during the talk to ask. Okay. Okay. Yes. Please. Okay, the Rabbi Halevi has a prophet that were not Israel. Moshe was never in Israel, and he makes an exception for Moshe because Israel didn't start yet. Israel wasn't there yet. Yeah. By the way, the one thing you're going to find, Ms. Masri, first name is Masha. One thing you're going to find is that when you're dealing with the Rabbi Halevi, Rambam, and other medieval Jewish thinkers, they do try to grapple with the biblical text, but often the philosophical position that they have that precedes the biblical text. In other words, their perspective and their position is not driven by the biblical text, but is driven by what should be right philosophically. We find that in Rambam as well, in many, many places. So Halevi, Ramban is less that way. Ramban Nachmani is less in that direction. Okay. Another popular conception that was prevalent in the medieval world in Aristotelian philosophy was that the climate that you were in, it was a climatic theory of sociology, anthropology, where you were, what part of the world you lived in, meant what type of qualities you were going to have as a people. It affected, and we're going to see this in the Rambam as well, it affected how you, but this is taken from Galen and from other people who were philosophers, the general philosophers at that time. Where you lived in the world affected who you were. Now, I've seen studies, the theory went like this. If you lived in the north, I don't know the whole theory, I have to tell you. I don't know the whole the details. They divided the world into seven different geographical regions, and each region was affected by one of the planets, and one of the planets, in their view. And each of the regions was, if you were in that area, the northern area, then you had less intelligence, even. You had, because you were able to make you formed your words differently. The languages came out differently, and therefore, if you have a language this way, then you can't think clearly, and you don't. And that one thing led to the next, and you come up with that. So, for Halevi, Eretz Yisrael is the perfect place for prophecy. Let's see where he explicates that idea. In page one of the handout book. Amar HaChaver, on page one of the handout, Amar HaChaver, the Chaver, Ken HaKavod, a little quick introduction, the Kuzari, the book of the Kuzari. The book of the Kuzari is a work that was written by the Biyuda Halevi in Arabic. It was written based on a historical legend. A legend that happened maybe 100, 200, 300 years, 200 years before Halevi. And it was there going around that there was this tribe of people, this group of people that converted en masse to Judaism. They were called the Khazars. The Khazars, as the legend goes, the king one evening received, and this is how Halevi presents the legend, the king had a visionary dream, in which he was told, your intentions are good, but your actions are not. He's told, your intentions are good, but your actions are not. And the king said, well, this was a prophetic vision. God spoke to me. He said, my intentions are good, but my actions are not. And then he invited four people to come and speak with him. The four people represent the four major approaches to life at that time. Major, big pictures about life at that time. And they were the philosopher, the Christian priest, the Muslim leader, the Muslim cleric, and the rabbi. He called the rabbi the Chaver. The Chaver means the member of a club, the member of the group. In Talmudic literature, it's also called the Chaver. So these were the four people who came to him. And each one presented their view about life, about God, about religion, about connection to God. Because in those times, the philosophers also were Aristotelian, and there was a kind of God in Aristotelian view. That's the prime mover. That's the one that created it all. However, in Aristotelian philosophy, the prime mover goes through like that has no knowledge or no even concern about the things that he's created. Now I feel at home like in Israel. One of the ways of analogizing what the Aristotelian prime mover was like, he moved through the ocean like a tremendous cruise ship. As the cruise ship moves through the ocean, as the tanker moves through the ocean, it makes a lot of ripples, it has a lot of effects. But that tanker moving through the ocean has no idea of the ripples that it sends out. Likewise, in Aristotelian philosophy, the prime mover exists in the world, affecting and creating everything around him, but unconcerned and unknowledgeable, has no contact at all with him. So the philosopher comes to the, so now the Khazar king says, invites these people in and says, I had this vision. And the philosopher says, well, my view of the prime mover is one where each one presents their view. The philosopher presents his. He says, well, you say that God doesn't know anything, but he spoke to me, so you're out. The Christian comes in. He says, well, you're a derivative of Judaism, so you're out. I want to go to the source. The Muslim comes in, also a derivative. I want to go to the source. And he calls the Chaver, he calls the Jew in. And most of the book is a conversation between the Chaver and the king. The Chaver, and he tells the Chaver, listen, I wasn't even thinking of calling you. But when I saw that the two come from you, I had to talk to you. At one point, the Haver says, and that's where we start in page one of the handout, Amar HaHaver, Kela Kavon Nitzotz Or Elohim, Mo'il Etzel Amo U'Be'Artso. Yes, we believe in the spark of divine now, of divine light, Nitzotz Or Elohim, and it works for Etzel Amo Be'Artso. It works only for his people in his land. For his people in his land. Amar HaKuzari, Ma'amarcha Etzel Amo Kvar Hitba'erli. The understanding of why it works for his people, he had previously explained. But why does it work only in the land? And he says, well, that's hard for me to understand. Okay, section 10. Amara Chaver. The rabbi responds.
Because he got the inspiration there?
What's that?
Because he got inspiration outside?
He got some type of vision outside, but also he doesn't understand that why it should be limited. Why is it only limited? Why is prophecy only limited to that place? It shouldn't be too hard in your eyes that one land is better than all the rest. When you see a place where some plant grows better, he says different places have different things growing there. You have certain regions that are good for certain types of wines and grapes. You have certain regions that certain type of animals grow there. You have certain different things produce different qualities of things. You know, for some reason in Australia, right, you have a lot of marsupials that don't exist anywhere else in the world. You didn't use that example, but we see this happening. And instead of using any type of evolutionary theory to explain it, right, he says it depends on the mezeg, the temperament, the temperature, the climate of the area. That's his climatic theory. In number 11, he says, "Amara Kuzri." In any shomei ala shochnim be'eretz Yisrael yitron al shar anshei ha'olam. Wait a second. I don't hear anything in about the people who live in Israel that are any better than anywhere else. And he says, and the rabbi answers, "Ken harechem ze shatem omrim shematzliach bo hakerem ilo hayu notim bo agfanim v'ovdim avoda aroya lahem lo haya ose anavim." He says very simply, wait, the king says, in my days, I don't see the people of that area that are any better than anything else, anywhere else. What do you mean? Only the people there can get prophecy? I go there, I see this, they're no better. Who's got the answer? If you have a great place for a vineyard, but you don't plant the grapes there, if you have a great place for a vineyard, you don't plant the grapes, so then you don't have good grapes. If you have a great place for the vineyard, and you plant the grapes, but you don't work the land, then you don't do what you have to do to have grapes grow, then you don't have good grapes. So, yes, the land is suited, but the people that are supposed to be there are not there, and the proper work service to that's not being done, and therefore, it's not in our days, it doesn't exist, it doesn't happen, and that's what the Kuzari says. In verse 14, he explicates this completely. In verse 13, he asked Moshe's question. In section 13, he asked Moshe's question. Amar HaKuzari, Ve'echu zeh ukvar ibru me'adam arishon ve'ad Moshe be'eret acheret. From the first man until Moshe, Avraham be'ur kazdim ve'achar kan be'yechezkel ve'daniel ve'bavel ve'yirmiyah ve'mitzrayim. And the Kuzari answers, the rabbi answers, Kol mi shenitdaber lo nitdaber ki im ba. Now here's the thing, o be'avura. either within the lens or about the lens. Okay? So the or about the lens, okay, that's about Moshe, that handles Abraham, that handles everyone else. Okay? It's either in the lens or about the lens. And then he goes through how each one is about the lens. And you have it, I cut off in the middle there because he goes through each one, how it's about the lens. One I wanted to point out to you, and something that's a very strong proof for him, the Navi that was followed by the big fish. Yonah. What does he say before he runs away? What's his idea of running away? How could he run away? But if you take the Kuzarit approach, that Nivuah is only in the land, okay, when I'm in the land I get the Nivuah. If I leave the land, I'll be free. I'll be without the Nivuah. So, let's just to recap the Kuzarit approach. Yes? Yonah leaves. God gets Yonah gets prophecy, not about Eretz Yisrael, not about Am Yisrael, about Ashur, completely. So Yonah stands. What's that?
He's not clarifying. He's not saying what kind of prophecy. He's saying no prophecy.
He's saying that if the prophecy is about Eretz Yisrael, that's also okay. If the prophecy is about Eretz Yisrael, that's also okay.
But didn't you say in the beginning that Yehuda Halevi said that any prophecy and his belief has to be to a Jew in Israel?
Right. That's the big picture.
About Mickey Mouse. About
right. Right.
Israel.
And then we broadened it a little bit more and saying that it could be about Israel. Anywhere. He broadened it. Okay, but the major picture is...
that's less than this.
Yeah. He presents it first that way in order to give the big picture. But then he says also that it's about Israel. But David, Dr. Aza, as we said before, the thinkers were not really so bound by the biblical text, and they sometimes do things that are okay, not strictly according to. So Halevi, particularistic. Halevi, the land. The Jewish people, they're the ones who have prophets, and that's the importance of the land for Halevi. Now let's go to Rambam. Rambam So before leaving Halevi, just one look. Before leaving Halevi, on page 2 of the handout, okay. Before leaving Halevi, Yehuda Halevi, after some sections which I didn't copy over here, but sections where Halevi describes all the things that the Hachamim say about Eretz Yisrael, how Eretz Yisrael is the place where if you leave it, you don't have a god, and anyone who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, like he's doing Avodah Zarah, and he goes through a whole list of things that Hachamim say about Eretz Yisrael. In 23. In section 23 on the page 2 of the handout, the king says, Amara Kuzari, Imken, if that's the case, if Eretz Yisrael is the great thing, Ata mekatser bechova toratcha, you are falling short of the obligations of your Torah. That you don't get up, Sheinata mesim gamatcha makom hazeh v'tasimenu bet chayecha umotecha. Okay? Why don't you go and live there? The king says, you're a hypocrite. You're speaking about Eretz Yisrael, how great it is, you are a hypocrite, Halevi. Why don't you go and move there? And that, in 24, he answers, Hovashtani melech huzar, you have shamed me, you have disgraced me. In other words, you have found my disgrace. You have disgraced me, you have shamed me, you're right. in other words. And Halevi at the end of his life, at the end of the book also, at the end of the book, let's see if I'm pretty sure I brought it here somewhere. Okay, at the end of the book, Halevi says, I'm leaving to Israel. That's the end of the story of the Kuzari. He says he's leaving to Israel. The king says, after all you've described, then of course that's what you should be doing. You should be going to Israel, going to Eretz Israel in order to get that inspiration of the prophecy. However, aren't you worried about the dangers of the way? And he says, no, that's what I have to do. I have to go. As legend has it, Halevi ends up making it, and we know historically that Halevi did leave Spain. And as legend has it, he made it to Eretz Israel, and he made it to, even they say, to the gates of Jerusalem. And this is legend now, because we have no verification of this, but that he came to the gates of the city, and he bowed down and licked the earth of his, because he made it to the gate of Jerusalem, he licked the earth for joy of being there. As he writes in one of his famous poems, Zion Halotishali, Zion, why don't you ask for the welfare of your children? He licks the ground and he starts walking towards the ruined Beit HaMikdash, and as legend has it, a local Arab person riding on a horse trampled him. And Halevi, and this is a legend, we don't know, it's not verified, but that's Halevi's end, according to the popular mind. If you go ask anyone how did Halevi die, they would say, who is Halevi? But then in Israel, for example, many people who do know things, they know this thing about Yehuda Halevi. Okay, let's go to the Rambam. The Rambam, the perfection of man is the perfect man is the prophet. And again, he says that the prophet is the one that has come through all the levels of perfection. Not anyone could be a prophet. But according to Rambam, an interesting thing, Rambam, the person who has achieved the level of perfection of his the physical perfection, does he have the character traits, the physical character traits? He has the powerful, he's perfected his power of imagination. And the person who has come to the understanding, he has perfected his intellect, his imagination, he has physical and his behavior, and he follows the whole Torah, and that's the person who will become a prophet. And according to Rambam, it almost sounds like once a person achieves these things, prophecy is almost like the natural next step. It's like it just comes to him. Rambam definitely does not make any connection to Eretz Israel as far as prophecy is concerned. According to Rambam, a person can be a prophet anywhere in the world. Yes, Eli.
What is his work making wrong to perfect the intellect, to get to know God, that personal relationship, and that was the means to that goal?
Yes. What was the means to that goal? Prophecy?
Prophecy, and what you're describing seems to be that's the ultimate goal.
That is the goal for Rambam,
right?
To have this connection with God, this communion with God. The perfect person in these four ways would be able to achieve that closeness.
Not connected to Israel anyway.
No, not connected to Israel anyway. But we will see in a minute how it might be. It might be. By the way, some ask what drove Halevi to this? What drove Yehuda Halevi to have this position in Eretz Israel? What was the motivation? Some say,
pride.
Okay, Eli, you got it. You hit it right on the nail, right on the head. Pride. When does a person have to show his pride? When does a person have to say, "Hey, everyone, I'm Jewish"?
Right.
I don't have to say this in a group that's going to be, hey, I'm proud to be Jewish. I don't care what you speak. You don't have to do that over here, right? When does he have to show that he's proud about something? When he's challenged. Well, who is Halevi challenged by? Who is Halevi challenged by? By those three things, by those three philosophies. In fact, most of us know Halevi's book as the book of the Kuzari. Not many people know the subtitle. The subtitle is okay. So the defense part was right. Faith is right. But the key word, a defense of the despised faith. A defense, an answer of the despised faith. The faith. Despised is the key word. Despised.
What year are we talking about again?
Talking about the 10th century. Or the 11th century. Wolfson, in explaining why does Halevi pick Eretz Yisrael, Am Yisrael, they're the only ones that can be prophet, that's the only place, because he wants to bolster up the people. He wants the people. Who does he have to defend the despised faith to? Well, maybe he has to defend it to the other people around, but he also has to defend it to the Jews themselves. So Wilson sees it as Jewish pride. Altman, another scholar who studied, says Halevi is a serious person. And it's not only pride that's motivating him, but it comes from his view of the world. He also has the climatic theory of things, and he believes this. He really does believe it. But it's the defensive part, the apologetic part, stands out because of what he's trying to do as well, but it also follows his beliefs. Okay, let's go to Rambam. Halevi, particularistic, defending the despised faith, defending Jews. Rambam says he's a rationalist. He believes that any person, anywhere in the world, can become a prophet. Any person who achieves the right levels of perfection of the three things, the four things that we spoke about, he attains prophecy. So the Rambam seems to have no connection to Eretz Yisrael at all in terms of what it means to be a prophet. However, even in the Rambam we can find somewhat of a connection, because we can still ask the question, well, why does it turn out that most of the prophets ended up being in Eretz Yisrael? That question might be asked to the Rambam, right? If prophecy can be had by anyone, why are most of the prophets Jewish, and why are most of the prophets in Eretz Yisrael? And for the Rambam, the answer to that question is not a mystical answer like the kind that Halevi gave, well, to the Jewish people. It's not even what you might call a kind of racist answer, right? Because Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is saying a certain thing about Jews, that it makes them better to get prophecy. Rambam says no. It's the Torah. One of the perfections, Rambam needs the perfection of the values, of the intellect. It's the Torah is the thing that brings the perfection in. Now, the Torah is available to anyone, to anybody in the world. In fact, therefore, the Rambam does not have this thing that Halevi has, this question one might ask. What if a person converts according to Judaism, according to Halevi, and according to the Rambam? According to Halevi, that person can never be a prophet. Anyone who derives from a convert can never be a prophet. According to Rambam.
Did you say that outright?
Yes. Yes. I mean, Halevi is known. Halevi is not a good person for political correctness. We have to just put that on the table, and he starts in one of his most egregious violations of political correctness. He says, you know, we have domem inanimate. You're going to say different levels, right? You have inanimate objects. Then you have, what's the next level up would be? Plants. Okay? And above that would be animals, right? And above that would be human, men, and then women. No. Okay? And then you have these levels. And he says, just like the difference between the inanimate object and the plant. Okay? We're all the difference, right? The difference between the plant and the animal. That's the difference between a non-Jew and a Jew. Right? You think of the difference between a plant and an animal, or an animal and a human, and then say that's the difference between a Jew and a non-Jew and a Jew. It's, right? What's that? Right. But for him, that's what it means to be a chosen people. That's the thing. And there's no way to get into that. It's purely racial. It's just that you shouldn't feel too bad, because he also goes after that. There's non-Jew, there's Israel, and then there's Levi, step higher. And Joe, you'll be happy about this. Kohen is at the top of the pinnacle.
Actually,
the differences are there. That's how Rambam has none of this. So Rambam, but the Rambam does have some, although he doesn't say that Eretz Yisrael per se is a place where you have prophecy. He allows prophecy all over the world by anyone. So there is something, though, that our Galut situation. That our Galut situation makes it difficult to have prophecy. And here in the Moreh Nevuchim, if you look at page number 3 of the handout, you already know that any physical strength gets weakened and lessened, right? And sometimes it's better, sometimes less. And so also I'm just going to translate straight. When their powers of intellect get weaker when they're in mourning and when they're sad or when they're angry. And you also know that the rabbi said, "Ein hanivua shorah lo mitoch atzvut lo mitoch atzlut." That prophecy does not come to a person, whether he's sad or if he's lethargic. Yaakov Avinu lo ba'atzhu nivua kol yemei avlo, and all the days that he was mourning for his son, he did not get prophecy. Yitasek kocho amedame ba'avkid Yosef, mipaked Yosef. ושמשה רבנו עליו השלום לא בעתו הנבואה כבואה מקודם. And he gives the different examples that of people who were sad and mourning cannot get the prophecy. And then skipping down a little bit, וזאת היא הסיבה העצמית הקרובה בהפסק הנבואה בזמן הגלות בלא ספק. This is the reason why we don't have prophecy in the time of the Galut, in the time of the exile. Why doesn't prophecy exist now when we're in exile? Because we're sad, we're pressured, we're pursued, we're oppressed, we have to worry about a million different things, of how just to survive. כלומר, עצלות או עצלות שיהיה לאדם בעניין מן הגנים, יותר רע מזה, יותר עבד, נקנה, נאבד לשכלים הזונים. Worse than that is that he's a slave, subjugated by these foolish, these whoring fools. Okay? Asher, and then he goes, he doesn't have good words for the people who are, you know, the non-Jews around them either, or the nations, and they're all types of beastly people and so on. So how could a person be involved in this type of pursuit and still have have the presence of mind and the strength to get prophecy? Victor.
Why do you insist in finding a prophet and one who has prophecy, not that they be one with the conscience of the generation?
That might be a definition of prophecy. The question is that the definition that Rambam and Halevi are using. So yes, when we have the prophets in the Torah and the Tanakh, that your definition is ringing out of the Tanakh, almost every page of the Tanakh. That's correct. Let's see how Yirmiyahu talks. Let's see how Moshe Rabbeinu talks. Let's see how Yechezkel. The conscience of the nation. That's, I think, a very apt phrase way of describing it. For the Tanakh. But we're dealing now with the medieval thinkers. The medieval thinkers don't work in that realm. They work differently. Okay, Rambam, therefore, does not make the connection to Eretz Yisrael prophecy, only a very tenuous connection. We're in Galut, and therefore it's hard to have Nevuah when you're oppressed. The Torah gives us an advantage, but it's not an advantage as racial or genetic. It's an intellectual advantage. It's a spiritual advantage available to anyone. So, to recap, the Yehuda Halevi, particularistic, Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, to get prophecy. Rambam, universalistic, could be by anyone. However, conditions favor Jews in Israel, not any time, but during the time where we're settled and not pursued. Okay, another question. Alan? Yes? A pious person. Yeah, but the point, he was saying, why is it they both have the same view of a prophet, not the conscience of a nation view, right? They both have the view of the prophet as the one who is communing with God. They have this this connected, this vertical view of the prophet and not the horizontal view, right? As Victor was trying to say, it's the horizontal view to the nation, to the people, right? That's the prophet. But they have a vertical view. It goes from man to God only. Okay, let's bring the third person into the discussion here, and that's the Ramban. Okay, the Ramban. Before the Ramban, because we have a lot of Ramban here. Generally, the Ramban is very, very positive about Eretz Yisrael. Let's always remember that. If you look at page number 5 on the handout. Asur letzet me'eretz Yisrael lechutz la'aretz le'olam. You can never leave Israel, ever. Sounds like my wife. you can never leave Israel, only to learn Torah, to marry a woman, or to save or lehatzil min ha'akum v'yachzor la'aretz, or to save from the hands of the non-Jew who's oppressing and capturing, and then return. But ken yosehu l'schora, and you could also go out of Israel for business. Aval lishkon b'chutz la'aretz asur. But to dwell permanently outside of Israel is forbidden. Only if it's elin ken hazak sham ra'av ad shenasa shaveh dinar chitin b'shnei dinarim. Only unless there's a tremendous famine and there's not a lot of food, and then they have to live there, and they have to live outside. But that's the only reason, the only way a person can leave Israel and stay outside. Now, by the way, this is not saying that it's a student to live in outside of Israel. That's should be good. What's that? No, he's saying that if a person who's in Israel, see, I was worried that someone might hear this and say, what? The Rambam says that Asur to live outside the land of Israel? No, he doesn't say that. What's that? If you already live in Israel, to leave Israel and stay out permanently, that's Asur. What's that? Well,
we'll have a couple of
Harvey. No. I can say I have good precedent. The Rambam traveled to Israel and left to Egypt. And these conditions did not apply. Okay? So, and nowhere does he explain how he justifies that with what he wrote. Nevertheless, so...
There was no famine or anything.
There was no famine that the church didn't exist, but he was given a tremendous position in the community in Egypt, working with the king and working with the community. So it was a tremendous thing for him. Norfolk couldn't refuse, right. So in Halakha Yud, the great Gedolei Hachamim ayu menashkin al tuchumei Eretz Yisrael. The greatest of the wise men would kiss the borders of Eretz Yisrael. When they got to the border, they would bow down and kiss. Umenashkin avaneha, and they would kiss its stones. Umitgalgelin al afara, and they would roll around in its dust. Vekenu omer ki ratzu avadecha tavaneha ve tafara yechonanu. You've all seen or heard about the practice of some of the, when the Ethiopians arrived and the Operation Magic Carpet, the Kisla. This is based on the Rambam. When the Temanim arrived, the Temanim are based on the Yemenite Jews. But based on the Rambam, they did this as well. And that becomes a practice for some people who arrived in the land of Israel. I never saw it happening now these days, but it used to be that way. Halakha 11: anyone who lives in the land of Israel, all his sins are forgiven, and so on. And in Halakha 12: anyone leolam yidor adam be'eretz Yisrael afilu be'ir shiruba akum. A person should always live in the land of Israel, even in the city that's all full of pagans, and not live in Chutzlaretz, and even in a place where it's mostly Jewish. Shekol hayotzeh lechutzlaretz kilu aved avodah zarah. Anyone who leaves Eretz Yisrael is like he serves avodah zarah. And he quotes the pasuk to prove that. Anyone who goes shekol hayotzeh lechutzlaretz kilu aved avodah zarah. Shneimar ki gershuni hayom yistapeach benachalat Hashem. Go and serve other gods. Okay, now look at the last line. Kishem Shas, this is very apropos of today. Kishem Shasur leset me'aretz lechutz la'aretz, kach asur leset me'bavel l'shar arasot. Shinemar, bavela yuvu'u, v'shama yiyu. Just like you cannot leave Israel to go outside of Israel, you cannot leave Bavel, which is today Iraq, you cannot leave Iraq, coming Bavel to go to outside of Bavel. Bavel, of course, was in the Talmudic times, was another center. It was the center of the Jewish world outside of Israel.
But New York,
like New York today, very possibly. South community, it's lampish. Just one second. The Rambam in another place says that it's allowed to live outside. It's allowed. But his problem, the problem here is leaving. Okay? It's leaving. You cannot leave Israel. You cannot leave Babel. You can live outside if you happen to be there, but do not leave. Do not weaken what's already there. Dave.
I believe it's a kind of egg statement that the prophecy has a lot.
It's a Braita, right? Which says Sof Nevuah, Hagai Zechariah Umalachi. Like something like that. Well, they're not saying any of these prophets are going to write books that'll be put in the canon.
So that's
yeah.
Really my question.
Canonical.
Are we talking about a different character of this
Nevuah? Yeah, this is more the communion and not the canonical prophet that gets in the Tanakh. That's how they explain this with the rabbis, man.
Rabbi?
Yes.
How did you square the not leaving Babel? That's not at Israel, that's only a community. And certainly they were oppressed very, very, very badly.
In Babel?
Yes.
In Babel, up to the even through the Muslim period, it wasn't so bad. You know, Babel from the Talmudic period on, from this say from the was a place where Judaism flourished, where the Jewish people flourished. In fact, the Babylonian Talmud became the Talmud that we follow, as opposed to the Eretz Yisrael Talmud, because Babel had such a freedom. Jewish life was autonomous there to a great degree, and the Eretz Yisrael under the Roman influence was very, very oppressive.
Okay.
So
that being said, still, why does he? Is there a justification for not leaving Babel?
Babel was the center. So if you're in the center,
stay with the community.
Stay with the community. If you're in Israel, stay in Israel. But if you're out of those places, you don't have to go there, right? But if you're there, you have to stay with the center of the people. Okay, Ramban, you know, let's skip a little bit. Says something. Skip to page number 7 of the handout. Ramban takes one verse, and he has said the same idea in several places of his writings. He takes one verse. Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, he lives in northern Spain in the 13th century. The end of his life, he makes Aliyah. That means he moves to Israel. It's not like making Aliyah today. He didn't have to deal with the ministry of the absorption, all the bureaucracy. They're much more difficult today. In his times, it was very, very difficult to make that trip, and he makes it in the last years of his life, and he makes it as a result of his involvement in the great disputation. One of the popular sports in Christian Spain was every once in a while they'd get a Jew in for a debate. Okay, they'd let's say we want to debate religion. Let's have a discussion about religion. Okay, and that was always it was like a heads I win, tails you lose kind of situation, right?
Stop beating your wife.
Because what's that?
Like, when did you stop beating your wife?
right. There's no way out of that. So he was it's kind of like if you lost the debate, well then you would there was a pogrom. But if you won, there was a pogrom. Why? Well, we don't like losing. That was the Christian approach to at that time to Jews, to the Jews. Ramban was called into a debate by Pablo Cristiani, who was a Jew who had converted to Christianity, and he won the debate. And 3 years later, he had to flee Spain forever, for the rest of his life.
How do you win?
You defend it and knock out all the possible, you knock out all the points that were put up. There's a way that they...
How
did they know that they won? They had the independent people judging, and there was the king himself, the king, in that debate, said clearly that Ramban was the winner of that debate, of that disputation. Ramban comes to Eretz Yisrael, and in a little while we'll look at a letter that Ramban writes to his children at that when he arrived, his first year in Eretz Yisrael. On the pasuk that says, "And the land will vomit you out," there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, "If you sin, the land will vomit you out." Now, when you say the land will vomit you out, anyone remembers college English? Right? What is that? It's personification, right? The land is vomiting. It means exile, but that's the term the Torah uses, is to vomit you out. Well, the land then has a certain quality to it, has a certain ability to react. According to the Ramban, look at a handout, page 7, please. He says in 7 at the beginning, at the top of the page, he says that the land, because of the sin of promiscuity, the land will vomit the people out. What's the connection between arayot, which is gilu arayot, promiscuity, and the land? It's not connection. Aval soda davar. But the secret of the issue is in Anachel El Yon Goyim, that the land of Israel is God's land. This is God's land and God's people. Although God created everything, this is the one He chose for Himself. So Eretz Yisrael is God's particular land. And that's where, skipping down a little later on, where God said you'll be for me a land, a people, and I'll be for you a God. When you live in the land, you're closer to God's palace, and when you're closer to God's palace, you're more likely to be noticed and to be punished for doing something wrong. Hinei b'chutz la'aretz, skipping down a little bit on page 7, in outside the land of Israel, the last paragraph that's there, Afa bi alkol l'shem hanichbad ein tara bashlema. The purity in outside of the land of Israel is not complete, because it has to go through other divine beings. That's how the Ramban sees it, and he goes through a whole description of how the divine beings work and how we're connected to God directly. And then in the middle of page 8, Umin ha'inyan hazeh amru b'sifrei v'avatem mehera, and you will be destroyed, perish quickly from the land, even though I chased you out of the land, from the land, to outside the land, to chutzalas, heyu metzuyanin v'mitzvot shekeshetechazru lo yehu alechem chadashim. משל לאדון שכעס על אשתו ושלחה לבית אביה. שלחה לבית אביה. אמר לה, הווי מתקשטת תפשיטים שכשתחזרי לא יהיו עליך חדשים. וכן אמר ירמיה, הציבי לך ציונים. אלו המצוות שישראל מצוינים בהם. רמב"ן quotes from the Sifrei and he says, I'm going to chase you out of the land. What does that mean? When you leave the land, be keep the mitzvot. Keep the mitzvot so that when you get back to the land, you won't forget them. Keep the mitzvot outside the land so that when you get back to the land, you won't forget how to do them. In another place, he gives the example. Wear tefillin when you go outside the land, so that when you get back to the land of Israel, you'll know how to do it.
No obligation.
Oh, hold on. He's telling you to wear tefillin, but he's saying, and he gives a parable. Listen to the parable. It's like a man who has a fight with his wife. And in those days, when you have a fight with your wife, you can have a refund. You can send it back to her family. Send it back to her father. And as he sends his wife back to her father, he tells her, I want you every day to put on your jewelry and to bedeck yourself like you would normally do when you're married, when we live together. So when you come back to living with me, you'd know how to do it. If we take this parable a minute and think about it, all the time she's by her father's house, adorning herself with the jewelry for a husband who's not there, that's not real. It doesn't count. But it's only for when she gets back. Taking that analogy now back to, what's your name?
Charlie.
To Charlie's point. So, well, that means that we're outside of the land, we don't have to do it. We're not obligated to do it. You said a fancier tonight. The Ramban would say the obligation is to do it, but the main reason is like rehearsal. It's a rehearsal for the play. It's like practice for the game. You have to practice if you want to play well. Yes, you have to do mitzvot outside of the land, so that when you get in the land, you'll know what to do. And they're not. And that's why the Ramban's view is not the one you hear very prevalently. But the Ramban, again, is not driven by, also, the Ramban is not driven by the biblical text as much. The Ramban has this view of the land, and the reason why he has it is for, well, we won't get into it tonight. It's a little bit mystical, a lot mystical. So the Ramban, mitzvot in the land are the mitzvot that count. Mitzvot and chutzlaretz don't count. They don't really do the thing that has to be done. They're just practice for mitzvot in the land. Okay? If I say more about it, it's going to be very confusing. Now it's just a little bit confusing.
So you say with the implication that they're going to get back to the land?
Does he say that
you say it's the practice with the implication that they're going to get back to the
land? Everyone agrees that they go, if they do the mitzvot?
No. But the implication that...
Yes. That's the goal, to get back to the land. To get back.
That's practice. You're doing it for the game.
Yes. Each one of these says that to get back to the land is important, and that's the each one of them. The Ramban. We're going to wrap up now with the Ramban's letter. Just a thing from his. If we have the Ramban's letters, if you skip to. Okay, there's a couple of unnumbered pages. So it's No, actually, the numbers are different. The numbers are up.
No, not the
fair numbers. They're numbers. Page 12. The Ramban arrived in Israel at the end of his life, 1270, 1269, something like that. And his the first year there, he got stricken with malaria. Okay? His wife died of the same disease. And this is the letter that he writes to his son that first year when he makes a trip to Jerusalem. Yivarech Hashem b'ni Nachman. It says Igeret Zayin on page 12. Yivarech Hashem b'ni Nachman. His son's name was Nachman. Ure'e betuv Yerushalayim, ure'e banim levanecha, ukeshulchano shel Avraham Avinu yeshulchanecha. Yerushalayim ira kodesh, ani kotev elecha sifri zeh. Amen. Jerusalem, the holy city. Kishevach vehoda'a letzur yishi. Praise and thanks to the rock of my salvation, I made it in peace to the land of Israel, in peace on the ninth day of the month of Elul, and I stayed here until the end of Yom Kippur. And he says what he wanted to do is to go to Hebron, go to the next page, to go to Hebron and to dig a grave in Hebron. And what can I say about the land? The land is very desolate and barren. And he describes that there were only two people in Jerusalem at that time, two Jewish people in Jerusalem at that time. And they would bring people in for a minyan. And that was the situation. But, and skipping a little further, to be in Jerusalem at this thing is to see the coming of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and there's still something to see. And he prays that he'll have the merit to see the Beit HaMikdash as well. The Ramban, because of his belief of the position of Eretz Israel, eventually makes Aliyah, and this is the letter that he writes when he gets there, how happy he is to be there, even though it came at great cost to him. His son is back in Spain, and he says in one of the other in his Rashan Rosh Hashanah on page 15. You don't have to look there. I'll quote what I'll say what he says. He says, and the reason of the centrality of the Eretz Yisrael is the reason that he decided to leave his children, and that's something you don't normally do, leave your children, but to come to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why, because of that centrality of Eretz Yisrael. So let's recap. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, Rambam, and Ramban. We spoke about Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's approach. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's approach is Eretz Yisrael is the only place to get prophecy. Eretz Yisrael is a place that only Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, this is where prophecy has to be. We saw later that he expanded that a little bit. Rambam, prophecy can be anywhere, but when we're outside of the land of Israel, then we lose a little bit, when we're afresh and we don't have the presence of mind and the harmonious thoughts and all that to get the prophecy. Ramban, Eretz Israel is the only place the mitzvot count. Outside of Eretz Israel, they're rehearsal for the land. This does not become the prevalent view in Judaism, as some other views of Ramban also don't become the prevalent views. Ramban, for example, okay, we won't get into more examples, but Ramban's view, this one does not become the prevalent view in Israel, in the Jewish people. In closing, we might ask the question, what is the need? What is the need? Why can these ideas be brought today in any kind of connection to today? After living in Israel now, this is my 10th year there, I can say that there's such a difference in the sense of Jewishness that one gets there and one gets here. And it's a very different sense of Jewishness. You live in a culture, even though it's not everyone is Jewish and the government is not Jewish and the people who speak are they're all Jewish, but they're not all religious and all that. However, in Israel, the the culture is Jewish. The phrases that people use, they're drawn from the tradition. The ideas, the concepts, they're coming from within. You're not bombarded by the other religions, and they don't try to permeate your existence. You can build your communities without that need to build such strong walls against the other religions. In Israel today, we have the reemergence of a place where we can speak our minds and not fear what anyone else is going to say. We can have the ideas of what it is to be, what the Torah ideas are out, or ideas that stem from our tradition, be brought out fully, completely, without the things to look over our shoulders. What are the neighbors going to say? Rousseau, the famous social contract philosopher of France, said, I won't know what the Jews have to say until they're in their own land. I don't know if he was noted as a tremendous Zionist, but every time you have to say something as a people, but look, what is the ruler going to say? Then you don't have a chance to talk. In Israel, at least now, we have the chance to talk. I don't know if we like all that much what we're saying. I don't know if we like what's coming up, but we're only 50 years. But at least now we're starting to maybe learn how to babble about what it is to be an autonomous country, living through our culture, not only through our Torah, but through our culture, and having that culture refract through actual life. It's happening to our language. Right? It's happening to our language. In Israel today, we take it for granted. We take it for granted that children in the playground talk Hebrew. You know, there was a first in modern Zionist history. There's a person that exists that is the first Hebrew speaking child. You ever try to see, where did the rain start? You know, there has to be a place where it's not raining, a place where it is raining. Where is that place? There's a first child that people can say who his name is. It's the son of Eliezer ben Yehuda. Right? Before him, no one, what is his first Hebrew speaking child? I'm not talking about people who spoke Hebrew. There were people who spoke Hebrew throughout all of history, but they didn't speak it as their mother tongue. The first Hebrew-speaking child was a child who, around him, all the people had to speak Hebrew. He was brought up only hearing Hebrew, only being addressed to in Hebrew. That was the rule that Eliezer ben Yehuda had. Look at the language today. Look at the country full of Hebrew-speaking children. Right? And you say, this is what it is to live in a country. The language itself is growing. As language meets life, the dynamic of life impacts the language, and the language has to respond. For example, when you buy a computer program version 3 and the version 4 comes out, you have to
upgrade,
right? How does Hebrew deal with that language? Well, I'll tell you how Hebrew deals with the language. It didn't just say upgrade. Hebrew dealt with the language by taking a binyan, the shaf'el. Okay, I'm losing some people, but don't worry if you don't catch it. They took a binyan that exists as part of the language. They took a verb that exists, darag, or like madregot, or ledareg. Ledareg means to put in size order, right? Or importance order. And they took the binyan and the thing, and they made a new word, leshadreg, like leshachmea and leshachpel and the leshadreg. That's how you say upgrade. The word didn't exist before; it exists now. Because it had, the language is coming alive. The language is, just as a living person, his new situations, the dynamic of life, and reacts organically to it. The language hit a new situation reacted organically to it. Our culture, our traditions, our Torah is hitting a new situation, and now, only now, in our own land, can we say it can react unselfconsciously and fully autonomously to that new situation. Of course, our people, right, we've hit many new situations throughout our existence in every land that we were. But never before could we have acted unselfconsciously and autonomously as we can act now. I'm not saying that every reaction that we have is a good one. I'm not saying that we're really making the mark and making the grade here. But at least we have now the opportunity. The opportunity to really develop something great. And yes, I think that we might conclude with the Ramban at the end, that the true flowering of our culture and tradition happens in Eretz Israel. And this is the place where it's going to happen. And it's because it's the only place we can do it unselfconsciously as a unit, as a collective, where we can design everything from our government to our healthcare system to our sanitation in the according to what's coming from our tradition. What does that leave for those of us who do not decide to live in the land of Israel? What is the purpose of non-Israel Jewry in this whole equation? There is a purpose, but I believe that will take us into a whole another discussion. That's for another time. And if Merkaz Moreshet Israel will have me back, I would more than happily come back another time and discuss the issue of what the position of Galut, of non-Israel Jewry is in this equation. Thank you. Yes. Victor. A couple of questions. Oh, please, question.
I started doing deductions of Aristotle, which is around 300-400 BC. Were there any really philosophers identified before that period were important? And what would you classify the book York?
Were the philosophers before Aristotle? Of course. Oh, Jewish philosophers? Jewish philosophy now only gets developed in the 7th, 8th, 9th century CE.
Okay.
Much later, the Gaonim period, late Sivraim Gaonim period. That's Jewish philosophy. So no, there are no Jewish philosophers in the time of Plato and Aristotle. Jewish philosophy is something that's being drawn from the general society, what's going on in the Muslim world, where there's a resurgence of Aristotelian philosophy as the work is translated from Greek to Arabic. And Muslim society being very open, the Jews being a full partner in that society, they were influenced by that and developed Jewish philosophers like Saadia, Abraham Bar Chia, Abraham Bar Abraham, and Rambam, and so on. Okay. The Book of Iyov, I have a tape on that. They're available at very low cost. I'll send it just for the shipping. Thanks.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you, Rabbi, for that very interesting and inspiring talk. I also like to thank the sponsors for the evening, Gabby Kesri, Rani Bannon, and Joey Catan. And third, I'd like to thank Dr. Izzo for helping in organizing this. And finally, I'd like to thank you all for coming. Please come to the next lecture in this series, the Sephardic History Lecture Series. It'll be on April 2nd by Joey Mozeri, titled Torah, Ancient Relic, or Living Law, a Sephardic Rabbinical Approach. Please join us then. Thank you. Good night.